Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass. There are a number of articles that have been coming out lately that I'm happy about, but I'm also amused about. Time magazine put out an article recently called Getting Real About the High Price of Cheap Food, and the Washington Post has put out an article called The Meat of the Problem. And basically both of them are talking about all the things that have gone wrong with our food system and how it's impacting in a negative way climate change. And the solution, fortunately, both of them had come to pretty much the same conclusion, that the thing that we need to do is reduce our meat and dairy consumption and eat more fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds. And it's funny because it's in the news, but this information is not new. So I'm happy to see it finally in mainstream news. I wish it was out there a lot sooner, but people are getting the message. So that's good news. And my guest today is Ruby Roth, and she's the author of a book we're going to talk a bit about today called That's Why We Don't Eat Animals. She's an artist, author, and a teacher living in Los Angeles, and a vegan since 2003. She's been teaching art in an after-school program where children's interest in healthy foods and veganism first inspired her to write That's Why We Don't Eat Animals. Now, this book has been praised by Jane Goodall and PETA founder Ingrid Newkirk, among other leading activists and best-selling authors. And Ruby, are you with us?
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. It's nice to be among allies.
Exactly. That's one thing I love, why I love doing this show. I get to talk to some
normal people.
Exactly. Not the extremists. People who believe in a world where, well, like in the mission statement I just read, all are fed and, you know, no exploitation. Everyone is free to do what they want to do and what they're meant to do on this planet. And not just people, but the other living species that we inhabit this planet with.
I'm with you. I think maybe it's because I personally, and from what I do day to day, I see everything through vegan-colored glasses, and I think what we eat is a solution to many of the problems that are making headlines on the news today.
Just absolutely.
Everything from, ethical industry, which people have been paying more attention to since, I think, Enron and before, to global warming and climate change, to this desperate fight for health care, which nobody's talking about, you know, why we're sick in the first place.
That's right. Well, we have a lot of to talk about today.
Yes.
You just touched on some huge topics. We'll see if we can talk a little bit about each of them. Ruby's got a website called WeDon'tEatAnimals.com, so you can check that out either during the show or afterwards. Okay, so now you sound young, at least younger than me.
You should see me. I look like I'm 12.
Yeah.
I think that's why I was so successful with the kids at the school. They thought I was one of them.
That's right. So when did you get started on this path, and how did it happen?
Well, I will first say that I used to get sick a lot. I would get really bad sore throats, like tonsillitis, you know, 6 to 7 times a year.
Me too!
All the time. Just never made any connection to what I was eating.
Mm-hmm.
And my boyfriend, who probably a lot of your audience know through his artwork, he actually schooled me on what he was doing at the time, which was raw food and veganism. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to try. And so it started as a complete health experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I went vegan cold turkey and started eating a lot of raw food. And immediately I slept less, I slimmed down, I stopped getting sick. And I could feel my body running on clean fuel, and it was like taking off a heavy jacket and starting to run.
Mm.
And I was so excited about the health transformation that it just stuck. And then the more I learned about the animals and the emotional lives of animals and the ethics in this industry, down to even further how our vitamins are made and just how the entire food system is such a lie, the more my choice was validated.
Our entire food system is linked to a lot of oppression.
Yes.
And exploitation.
More than people know.
And more, yeah, amongst other things. Yeah, so what you've described is a very typical path that a lot of people take, and something I always encourage people that are really hesitant to try a vegetarian diet, but they really aren't feeling well and they have all kinds of health problems. What I like to say is just try it. Give it 3 weeks. It doesn't cost anything.
Yeah.
Just a few weeks of your life. It's not, you know, any major drug with side effects. And just see what happens. And every time, people feel better.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
A couple times that people have reported to me that they haven't felt better. Sometimes people do feel better at first, and they kind of start feeling bad a little while later. And usually what I've experienced and from what I've read is your body goes through a cleansing.
Yeah.
When you start detoxing and getting rid of the stuff that's in your body and, you know, living off of clean fuel, your body's going to get all that toxic stuff out. So sometimes there's a little hump to get over.
Right. No, you're right. My understanding of what happens is that when you're continually eating poor quality food, at some point, your body just gives up fighting. There's only so much it can take in and respond to, and at some point, it just gives up. And so you have a lot less vitality. And you don't seem to get sick, or you don't seem to respond to a lot of things that if you were really in good shape, if something bad came into your body, you would respond to. And so that when you start cleaning out, or you start eating clean foods, this gives your body an opportunity to get rid of all the stuff it's been collecting that it doesn't want.
Right.
And when it comes
out, walking down any street, you know, these people with these big bellies, and I used to see that one way, and now I see it as this is the body's attempt to protect itself from
yeah.
the inside with this layer of fat and plaque on the insides of the arteries and the intestines. And your body is just doing what it can to survive.
Mm-hmm. And I also agree with you that once you start eating this way, the door is opened to everything that's going on. When you realize you don't have to kill to live, kill other things, all of a sudden your perspective on everything changes and your view of the world changes for the better, I think.
Yeah, so, it's really it's a life changer.
Yeah, and you know, this show is called It's All About Food, but it's once you open the door, it's more than food. It's everything. But I like
it
to
is,
that
from,
it,
you know, health and disease to the cruelty of the animals to the land and air and ocean pollution and water waste and immigration, and you even get in deeper to, you know, how did we get to eat this way? And there's gender issues and race issues, and there's so many layers, and it's such a complex system.
And how did your family respond to your change?
Well, I was raised by a vegetarian mom.
Oh, wow.
Interesting, because it never occurred to me
mm-hmm.
to go vegetarian. She
didn't raise you vegetarian?
No.
Okay.
My father was a meat eater. His parents were, you know, very traditional Hungarian food, a lot of meat. So we did eat meat. She never did, but she would prepare it. And it was the same thing when I went to UC Santa Cruz, which I'm pretty sure is a vegan mecca.
Yeah.
And I lived with vegans, and it still never occurred to me. But it became part of my life later.
Okay. So then you decided to write this book. that's why we don't eat animals. And what inspired you to do that?
Well, I was teaching art at an elementary school after school program, and the kids were always really curious about why I wasn't eating their cheese sticks with them, the string cheese and the milk and all the stuff that they were being served at recess at this program. And I was a little hesitant at first to let them in. You always feel like you're going to get in trouble for talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
But I started talking about it little by little, and they were really interested and curious, and they wanted to know more. And the more I told them, the more they could handle it, and nobody was freaked out, and it was probably the way I delivered it. You know, I didn't say it in any scary way, just matter-of-fact, factual information about what goes on in the industry and why I myself chose not to be a part of it. And when I started looking into books on the subject for children, I couldn't find one that didn't
right.
sugarcoat it or that wasn't about a talking vegetable or a talking animal. And I decided to write it myself because it was such a passion of mine, and I could see the need for a resource with children. So there was absolutely no support at their school.
Mm-hmm.
Even if a child was to go vegan or vegetarian, there was no way that they could eat at that school and have options. So I thought if there could at least be a resource that families could use at home to feel supported, that would be one step.
Well, it's a really difficult subject, and factory farming and the cruelty that goes on to animals in those farms, it's difficult to talk to anybody about it. It's difficult to watch. Adults don't want to see it, don't want to hear it, don't want to know about it. So it's even more difficult, I think, to explain that to children. And some would say, is it necessary to do that? I have a really hard time with the whole thing. Personally, I don't want to think about it. I live my life in this joyous way, and I know that, you know, I'm not participating in it. But there is always some darkness in the back of my mind where I know that it's going on, and, you know, I want to shake everyone and say, how are we letting this happen? It's just so horrible.
Yeah. I think a lot of the comments that I get from on these blogs that report about my book and then people leave comments, I see a lot of parents who are fearful about talking to their kids about the truth. And I think it comes from a prescribed notion of children that smallness equals frailty and they have to be protected from
mm-hmm.
these facts. But I also see a lot of the parents' projections and this kind of guilty voice about, yes, we know it's horrible, but we can't talk about it because they can't handle it. There was one post recently that said it's too scary for children. And this was from an author who was admittedly a meat eater. And my thought was, you know, if it's too scary, then don't feed your children the end product of it.
Right, exactly.
But I've never experienced one kid. This author said she envisioned tears from children if this were to be read to her child. And I've never experienced that once. You know, it's only parents who are freaked out by the information.
Okay, so I'm looking at the book, and the artwork is really lovely. I mean, you have quite a talent, and I don't know what else you're doing with it. Maybe we can talk about that later. But I'm looking, I'm paging through the book now. I've done it a bunch of times. It's interesting because, and I don't know how many of these were conscious choices, but the pictures are not realistic, and although they're close to reality. And the animals, they're cute, but they're not you know, they're not like Disney cute, kind of. They don't seem to have the chicks are kind of cute. But they're not like super adorable. The artwork is beautiful, but they're not I don't know how to explain it. There's some, maybe it was intentional, but they don't look alive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so when I'm looking at the pictures of them confined, it's also not as drastic as what really goes on.
So well, there's two things about that. One, the design of the characters was actually influenced by the way I saw the kids drawing,
mm-hmm.
teaching them, and they're really genius at essentializing the shape of an animal, you know, down to its essential geometric form.
Yeah, it's really geometric. Yeah, I see that.
Mm-hmm. So the chickens, you know, a lot of them were drawing these circular chickens or crocodiles. They would do kind of a V shape on its side with these sharp teeth. And so the shapes of these characters were influenced and inspired by the way kids draw.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, you know, the caged animals in this book, you're right, it's not realistic like the images you would see if I had used photographs
mm-hmm.
instead. This is, you know, created mildly and manageable for what a kid can handle.
Yeah, so you touch on all of the essential items involved with factory farming and its impact on animals, cruelty, and also the environment. And it's amazing in the few small pages that are here that you do that. And I appreciate that it doesn't look as horrific as it really is. Okay, and so kids read this, and what happens? What kind of questions do they ask?
I find they have incredible insight. When I first read it, one of the first readings I did was to a group of third and fourth graders, and there was a fourth grade girl.
So that's like 7, 8, 9 years old.
Yeah. And there was the fourth grade girl who told me that their class was studying slavery, and the factory farms reminded her of slavery.
Mm. Which, wow.
This was no nudge from me. This was a connection she made on her own.
That, you know, that's fascinating because, well, there is a connection. I'm just finished reading a book, actually. I hope to have the author on this show at some point, called An American Trilogy. Don't know if you're familiar with it, by Stephen Wise.
No.
And he talks about the pork production in North Carolina in this one particular small town. And his book is all about that, how African-American slavery and also our massacres with the Native American Indians was like led the path to where we are today with this horrific factory farming of pork.
Yeah, I see the connection clearly, and the Holocaust as well. And I had my grandparents and their families were in the Holocaust, and some were survivors and some weren't, and I have no problem making the connection with the concentration camps to factory farms there.
Sure, I frequently use the term, although some people don't like it, but it is a Holocaust, what's going on with factory farms.
It absolutely is. And
but the question is, which came first,
mm-hmm.
Our horrific treatment of people or our horrific treatment of animals?
Well, I think it all comes from the same hateful place, whether it's racism or speciesism. It's believing that one belongs above the others,
mm-hmm.
and justifying it a myriad of ways to, you know, hold that true and keep that true.
Right. Okay, so let's get back to the kids. And you read this book, and so one of them made the connection with slavery, and what else have they talked about?
A lot of them talk about their, you know, their aunt who's vegan or vegetarian, and they start thinking about why. And I ask, have you ever asked her why? And usually the answer is no. But I feel like the book was gave good impetus to start asking those questions.
So, well, this is California, so there is some exposure to vegetarians. I mean, there are some places where kids still wouldn't know anybody that's a vegetarian.
That's true. I think more and more I get letters from all over the world and all over America. I think more and more people are becoming vegan and vegetarian, and also in places that we wouldn't normally.
Do the kids turn it back to you like a lot of adults do when you tell them you're a vegetarian or a vegan? I find that the questions adults will give are very defensive.
Absolutely.
And did the kids do that?
No, kids, I've never had any kid ask me, where do you get your protein? I think it just, the information makes such sense to them.
Yeah.
And they have not been on this planet long enough to develop such an emotionally, deep emotional attachment to meat. And I think that we're raised from such a young age in a program that normalizes meat eating, from KFC commercials to the USDA food pyramid, that people cannot imagine living without it. They think it's a necessary, God-given, biological means of existence. And so to talk about not eating meat seems, you know, deprivative and even abusive. I've had one comment saying, you know, we need to eat as needed by our biology, and to not do so is child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much misinformation, and regardless of what our biology has been over millions of years, it was never fixed, and there was never one food chain. The food chains were relationships that change depending on the weather and the seasons and the area.
Absolutely. Because, you know, there were times when polygamy was the norm.
<Right. laughs>
And it is not anymore,
right.
At least in most places. There's plenty of that. But,
and so I find kids are really open, and the information just makes sense. They don't, you know, it's not a question, but a conclusion that if something is this wrong with the way we treat animals, that we should do something about it. And I had, you know, a majority of the kids in my class say, oh, well, I want to go vegan. And one girl said, I don't even like honey, so I'm going to be extreme. And I know that they were willing to do it. It's just that there was no support.
Right. What happens when they go home and they tell their parents? What kind of feedback do you get that way?
I never got any feedback from the parents. I think there was, you know, a nod here or two there. But
do you see these kids on a regular basis? A lot of them.
I'm not teaching anymore. This book has become my everyday life.
Right. So you read to the kids, but you don't find out what happens after.
Right.
Right. Unless they come to your site and write something on your blog.
Right. I've had some feedback from parents, you know, through email. One woman saying she's raising two vegan sons, and she felt like her son had a vocabulary that he didn't have before to express what he was feeling. And he felt so inspired after reading the book that he made all these posters about not eating animals and saving animals, and he posted them in his neighborhood and at his school library.
Mm-hmm.
So I think kids are, you know, they're really apt to feel and react from a feeling. And I think that a lot of adults, you know, we come up with excuses about why we shouldn't react to that feeling.
Well, I just wanted to recap a little bit of something you said a moment ago, and that is, you know, whether or not we are required to eat meat, and there's plenty of evidence that we are not required to eat meat, factory farming should be outlawed, period.
Yeah.
There is this thing called humane animal agriculture, humane farming.
Yes, and I think we're going to see more of that, this, you know, quote-unquote greening of agriculture.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not my choice, but it's infinitely better than factory farming. But the thing that people don't realize, and the more you read about the organic meat or grass-fed and free range where the animals are treated well until slaughter is that there's not enough land mass to grow the amount of animals that we are growing today for food. And so people will have to reduce their animal product consumption.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think it's inevitable because this system is not sustainable. And sustainable meat is not sustainable because, after all, you know, it's not, who is it sustainable for? Certainly not the animal. And I think that factory farming, I think we're seeing the start of it with the swine flu, is going to take itself out. And I'm excited for that day because the amount of animals in such close quarters and just the disease and the hormones and everything that is happening on those farms, I think it's inevitable that the way we're doing things right now in factory farms is going to have to end, and it's going to shut itself down.
Yeah, there are so many reasons not to do this. And unfortunately, we're not going to just reflect and say this isn't a good way to do things. Some unfortunate things are going to happen, like swine flu, like some sort of pandemic, in addition to people realizing their health is compromised, just so many different things.
Yeah. I think, you know, I kind of joke about it with close friends that I'm kind of excited for swine flu because I'm...
Yeah, but the sad thing is, you know, I would like to think that all of us who do our best to have a strong immune system will be able to thwart off any flu pandemic, but there will be a lot of innocent people hit if there is something like that.
It's true, but I think you build your immune system, and you stack your cards
mm-hmm.
in your favor. And you know, we're already not getting sick with things that people are ill from at the moment.
Right. So I'm speaking with Ruby Roth on her book, That's Why We Don't Eat Animals, and her website is wedonteatanimals.com. Okay, I remember when I was living in France in the 90s, I remember this 1 8-year-old boy that I was with quite often as our families mixed. He was always quite curious about me being vegan and wouldn't stop asking me questions like, if I was on a deserted island and there was nothing else to eat, you know, would I eat meat then? And he kept trying to come up with these situations where there would be nothing else to eat. And, you know, my response was, you know, if there's an animal, there's always something else to eat because that's what they're eating. But, you know, he just was trying to find a way, I guess, to justify the meat eating in his own mind somehow. Do you get that from kids?
I have not experienced that yet. They do ask a lot of questions, but so far it has seemed just from an inquisitive...
Do they ask why it's happening?
I'm trying to think if I've had a why. I can't remember specifically, but I think I would answer that question, you know, by talking about how... You know, the food pyramid is created, and who creates it, and how there's many different ways of eating,
mm-hmm.
and only some ways are, you know, taught. So, just to give another, always give another point of view.
Okay. So. You were reading this while you were... Okay, now you said that you read this book, and that's your sole activity. Do you get invited to read it? Where do you find your venues?
We've had a few events. We had an event here in Los Angeles, and I did one in New York, and we are planning some future events. But I've read at different, you know, eco-festivals, World Fest and Vegan Day and the Veggie Day parades, those kind of events.
Mm-hmm. So do the kids ask you what you eat?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot, and adults too.
Right. And how do they react to that? Because, you know, most young kids, they're not big on vegetables. They're big on breads and pastas. And
yeah,
a lot of them don't eat meat, don't like much meat either. So what's your response?
Well, I think that chocolate for anybody is a good place to start. The dark chocolates, the cacaos. You can't really find anybody who doesn't like a chocolate smoothie.
Mm-hmm.
So I always mention that one.
Mm-hmm.
We have a 4-year-old here at home, and she's born and raised vegan. And, you know, at 2 years old, she was sucking on green onions. Loved it. So it is, you crave what you eat. If you're eating cotton candy, then you're going to crave cotton candy. If you're
right.
eating raw kale, then that's what you're going to crave.
I know some young kids that love kale because that's what they were raised on.
Mm-hmm. Our 4-year-old loves it, and she just eats it all up. So I talk about the fruits and vegetables, and I think a lot of people say, oh, I'm not sure I've ever had vegan food.
Mm-hmm.
But every, you know, fruit and vegetable and bean, and that's all vegan food. If you've had an apple, you've had vegan food.
Right.
So it's right in front of them, and I ask, you know, have you ever been to a farmer's market? What do you see at the farmer's market?
Mm.
And, you know, that's right at their eye level, like the candy in the grocery stores. And they start naming things, and they, you know, say, yes, that's all vegan food. And I just tell them, you know, I'll go through what I eat in a day, and a lot of that food they're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Try to find the foods that, you know, every kid has had beans and rice.
Right.
Every kid knows what salad is. Every kid knows what a milkshake is. So all of those things are, you know, have vegan either alternatives or they are vegan themselves. So.
Now, the age group that you recommend this book for is 6 to 10.
Yeah.
And have you read it to younger children, like your own 4-year-old?
Yes. She loves it, and she totally gets it and has a lot to say about it.
Yeah, I'd be curious. What does she have to say about it?
Well, if you've seen the video on my website with the interviews from kids,
mm-hmm.
she's the last one to talk, and she says thank you for all the animals and just a very sweet message.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime she sees meat on TV, she always says boo, and she has a lot to say about animals and why she loves them and why we treat them right, and she's got an agenda. So I think that because this is the only book of its kind, I've gotten a lot of letters from people with, you know, babies, kids that are not even born yet, and parents who are buying this book because it's the only one out there.
Wow.
So I think it's expanding the range, the age range.
Now, what about milk? Do kids ask you about milk? Because that's something that we're so socialized into thinking we can't live without it, especially children. I know people that give their kids a glass of milk before they go to bed. They've got to have their milk, 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 milk.
Yeah, I think that's the first one that kids think of when you say dairy, because they're not thinking about butter and things that
mm-hmm.
you know are created from that first product. They ask, you know, what do you eat in your cereal? And there's so many different
mm-hmm.
milks now available,
right.
From rice milk to almond milk to hemp milk to cashew milk, and you know, all of these things that you can make at home pretty easily if you
mm-hmm.
have a blender and a cheesecloth. So it just starts to make sense to them that if they ask about milk and I have, you know, 7-10 different answers about what they could use instead,
mm-hmm.
there's really, they don't see a reason why not.
Okay, so have you gotten some negative feedback about this book?
Yes, there's been terms like propaganda and brainwashing thrown around, and like I said earlier, someone even called it abusive. And I've learned A few things about people from this experience, and one is just the evidence of widespread lack of information and just how successful the meat and dairy industry campaigns have been in normalizing meat eating.
Mm-hmm.
And two, that, you know, this prescribed notion that I was talking about children, that smallness equals frailty. I've seen in my own experience that kids are completely open and receptive to this information, and it's not just because they find the animals too cute to eat. It's because the information makes sense to them.
Do they talk about? I want to get back to the bad feedback that you've gotten, but I'm just thinking: do they make a comparison between their pet animals and the animals that are there to eat?
Yes, and that's why I start my book with pets, because it's very clear why you wouldn't eat your dog, why you wouldn't eat your cat or your bird or your fish.
Mm-hmm.
And the next step is, you know, why is that animal different from the cow or the chicken that ends up on a plate? And
do they have any reasons for why they're different? Do the kids have any reasons? Yeah.
No kid has ever come up with an explanation. They look to the sky and start thinking real hard, but I've never had an answer to that question.
One of my favorite quotes is a Gandhi quote about how first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight with you, then you win.
Right.
Probably paraphrasing it a little bit. But I think we're in the fight stage.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're past the ignore stage, and I think we're past the laughing stage. Vegetarians are definitely considered part of the population today. People talk about vegetarians pretty matter-of-factly on television and in movies, and there's plenty of vegetarian products out there. More and more doctors and nutritionists are saying, yeah, it's okay to be vegetarian as long as you take your B12.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're in the fight stage, so we're getting close to winning. And so,
yeah, and I think that's why because of this energy and in this fight
mm-hmm.
stage, I've experienced being called dogmatic and preachy. And I was thinking about it the other day, and I think that it's really because a lot of people are waking up to what is in fact preventable,
from mm-hmm.
global warming to disease, and, you know, realizing that you don't just get asthma or cancer most of the time, like stepping in a puddle. It's
mm-hmm.
not always something that just happens to you for no reason.
Right.
You're eating the cancer and you're eating that asthma.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that realization, when people wake up to that, creates such an urgent, mobilizing energy. And I know that from the response that I've got from this book, how excitable and supportive our worldwide vegan community is. And, you know, it comes, all of our quote-unquote dogma and preachiness comes really from a source of love and caring about people and wanting people to be healthier and live a better life and take care of our planet.
Yeah, that brings so many different things to mind. People frequently talk about, oh, you care so much about animals, what about people? And every vegan that I know is not just doing it for animals, it's for
and people are animals
and environment, the whole planet. It's the whole picture. We're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I am so passionate about the concept because I don't think anybody should have to physically suffer. Heart disease, diabetes, these things are preventable and reversible.
Yeah.
And it's just criminal almost. And, you know, you mentioned earlier on in the show, you know, so many different topics are related to our diet, and there's this whole healthcare discussion going on right now, and there's not enough discussion about prevention.
Yes, and there is such a despair and desperateness to this fight about healthcare. And honestly, I'm not that concerned about it, because either way, you know, most of the doctors I've been to have told me things that I know are untrue and have suggested things that are absolutely not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, if you're on the vegan vegetarian path, you're already putting yourself outside of the argument that's going on right now in the media.
I mean, we definitely need some sort of improvement in healthcare. And
absolutely.
Although I totally promote, and I think the vegan diet, a healthy vegan diet, is the best. It's not 100% cure. I know myself. I had ovarian cancer a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But I know them alive today because of my diet.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't prevent it, but I've survived it because of it.
And well, I think a lot of the arguments about, you know, how are we going to control the cost of this new program, I think a lot of that could be solved by, you know, an increase in preventative food and preventative medicine.
Oh, absolutely. The shame is we've invested so many dollars for diseases that are preventable.
Mm-hmm.
And if people were eating a healthy diet, then we could work on the stuff that's really challenging, you know, people that are paralyzed from accidents or, you know, things that aren't preventable. And it's just all the dollars that are put into all of this stuff, and it makes you think that they really don't want to cure these things because they're such big business.
Oh, they are. Yeah, I'm 100% sure of that.
So, okay. Let's move on to food, which is one of my favorite subjects in terms of what you like to eat. Are you primarily on a raw food diet, or are you?
The foods I eat mostly end up being raw food, but no, I'm not 100% raw.
Mm-hmm.
It goes up and down, the percentages.
So you tell the kids what you normally eat, and what is that?
Well, let's see, this morning I had a raw cacao smoothie, which was made from cashews and dates and raw chocolate powder and little agave and mint and some parsley in there, which I don't think any kid or any adult would notice that there were herbs.
That's right, once you add
herbs,
dates and...
Yeah, so that was my first thing of the day. And I'll just tell you, I'll look in the fridge. There's sprouted Ezekiel tortillas, and there's hummus, and there's lots of different herbs, and cherry tomatoes, and strawberries, and kale salad, and romaine salad, and cucumbers, and avocados, and hemp seeds. And those are all the staples.
Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty good. I'm getting hungry. Yeah, the thing is, when people have organic, fresh food, especially the fruits, kids can't resist them. You know, I don't know if you've ever brought food to any of your events, but when you put out brightly colored, fresh, sweet fruit,
mm-hmm.
Kids love it.
Yeah,
they don't need the candy and the Twinkies. Just give them the healthy food.
Our little one was eating these really sweet cherry tomatoes the other
mm-hmm.
day, and she probably was repeating something she had heard one of us say, but she said, "Why would you need candy when you have these?"
I know I've said that with some of those really sweet cherry tomatoes.
But it's true. They're attracted to those bright colors, and especially if you grow your own food and they get to watch these things grow from a seed into a plant, into something they can eat, they're much more inclined to try
mm-hmm.
something that they've seen grow themselves and they've participated. And I think that's the same in the kitchen. You know, if you're making a kale salad, you know, and they get to pour the olive oil in and spray the Bragg's on it, that they're much more inclined to try.
Do you talk about growing food with kids when you talk and read your book, or just in general?
I've talked with parents, and I've suggested some of the writings that I've done, ways to, you know, teach about the impact of our choices and what we can do. What else can we do besides, you know, choosing what we eat? But planting a garden is one thing on many levels, from, you know, just the sheer joy of doing it to, you know, putting more oxygen in your surroundings
mm-hmm.
to, you know, watching it grow and...
You know, you mentioned asthma before. Do any of the kids you read to have asthma or other ailments that they kind of make a connection is related to their food when you're reading to them?
Not that I've known of yet. I know there were in the school I was teaching at one point, there must have been because the percentages are so high. There were definitely kids who were obese.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think it was my job to call them out on that.
No.
But I think that they start to make the connections
mm-hmm.
themselves.
Wow. I mean, how wonderful would it be? How wonderful would it be if in the school system kids could learn about healthy food at an early age?
Yeah. And I think if parents want that, they need to be really vocal about it in meetings, because I know I've been not allowed to come to some schools because they can't endorse one particular way of eating, even though they are already.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But I think with parent support, and I think there's some, I know here, I don't know if it's Los Angeles only or a national program, but there is, I don't know if it's...
There's no soda in the schools in Los Angeles.
I've seen soda machines still.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how tightly that's enforced, but I know that there's something called the Child Nutrition Act, which I have yet to look into, but I think they're trying to make alternative choices available mm-hmm. in schools.
Yeah, it's very important. Oh, goodness. There's just so many things that need to change in schools. And they were talking a little bit that on the program just before me, but kids need to have some freedom, not be in a structured environment all day long, just to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of that's been taken away from the regular school curriculum because they're
mm-hmm.
supposed to cram all of this stuff that's considered, quote, necessary.
Right, and of course, you know, arts are the first thing to go.
And have you ever worked with any of the food services in any schools that you've spoken to?
I have not. The school I was teaching at was a Los Angeles department school, so that is a massive bureaucracy to try to get through. And I know there's been some campaigns to do so, but... That's why, you know, what inspired me to create this book was to get a resource out there that could be used in conjunction, you know, and at home. And I think it really starts at home, like anything else.
Oh, absolutely. Is there anything else that sticks out in terms of negative feedback? I wanted to say that don't read your press, weigh it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's all good press. It brings, even if it's negative, it's still bringing up discussion and points to talk about. Let's see. Publishers Weekly said, it wasn't all bad, but one of the things they said was, this is a single-sided narrative, which I think is absurd, first of all, because...
Really? Because you're just telling it the way it is.
Yeah, and just the fact that it's about factory farming inherently includes the other side, you know, what meat eaters.
You know, that's really interesting because for how many of us have been exposed to a single-sided fantasy most of our lives or as children where we're read books about, you know, Old MacDonald and his farm or other farms where there's the cow and the chicken and they're all romping around in the farmyard. And that just doesn't exist.
Of course. And I encourage people to just take one day and count how many references to meat they're exposed to, from conversation to commercials to radio to
mm-hmm.
everything. And it's really astounding when you start paying attention. So, you know, when I saw that, I thought, you know, how absurd to suggest that the vegan voice has to remain neutral and considerate to the meat-eating point of view.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and also there's been comments. Another one was Kirkus, who said...
Who was it?
Kirkus, another one of the big review publications.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think they said something like, children young enough for this for this book are in no position to make dietary choices for themselves, you know, which was, it made me really wish there was a game show called Guess the Carnivore, because it's such a no-brainer.
Well, you know, again, it's another ridiculous comment, because, you know, so many young children do decide what they're going to eat, and they shouldn't. You know, they should be guided and given, if they're going to be given a choice, it should be a bunch of healthy choices. But, you know, a lot of kids still choose crap, and that's what they're given to eat.
Yeah, and it's not actually the kids choosing it, it's the parents choosing it.
Mm-hmm.
The kids aren't going to the grocery store and buying that food.
Well, no, so, but they can,
you know,
scream for it.
When a parent says, my kid won't eat that, I say, well, they wouldn't if you weren't buying it.
Exactly, yeah. When you set the example, and when you only have healthy foods in your house, especially in the young ages when they're establishing their tastes for things, if you don't introduce an unhealthy food, they're not going to want it. It's very simple. I mean, I know kids that have been brought up on fresh fruit, and they don't want the really sweet treats.
Yeah, I think it tastes bizarre to them.
Mm-hmm.
I see that with my own here at the house. She won't even... In her preschool, they were serving tofu dogs, and she wouldn't touch it because she hasn't had processed food like that. She doesn't know what it is.
Wow.
But I think a lot of people know from a really young age that they don't want to eat animals, and some have the support and some don't. Alicia Silverstone gave me a quote on my book that said she wished she had this book when she was little, because she knew, I think she told me from age 9 that she didn't want to eat animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, it's great. And this is a beginning. You know, I hope this opens the door for a lot of other books on the subject for all ages, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you said you've gotten responses all over the world. Is it written in other languages, or is there a plan to do that?
We are looking into, you know, foreign rights and getting it published and distributed elsewhere. It can be found and all over the world. It's distributed by Random House, so they're very good at getting it everywhere, making it easily accessible. But we are looking into. I've had a lot of inquiries from Europe and Latin America and everywhere. Africa, they had the senator, Nico Kofferman from the Netherlands, from the Party of the Animals.
Yay.
So,
and
we very excited to support this book and try to help get it out there. So,
excellent. Now, what about, just before we end, how did you get it published?
That was a hard sell.
I mean, it's hard to get books published to begin with, but, you know, there's no niche here.
Well, North Atlantic Books is the publisher, and they're really great at getting books out that, you know, are alternative to the mainstream point of view. And it was still a hard sell, but I think they saw the potential that this book had to fill a void in an area where people needed this resource and wanted this resource. So,
the universe wanted you to put this out there and made it possible.
Yeah, we had a lot of hard working people help me.
So. Well, Ruby, it's been great talking to you. I can't believe we've come to the end of the hour.
Yes, thank you so much.
So, yeah, thank you so much for creating this piece of art and for talking with me today. I've been talking with Ruby Roth, author of That's Why We Don't Eat Animals, a book about vegans, vegetarians, and all living things. And her website is wedonteatanimals.com.
Correct.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen.
And I'm Karen Hartglass, and this has been It's All About Food.